This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We'll get help from Michael Williams, contributor, host for golf on CBS Sports Radio, also writes for GolfARX.com. Michael, how are you tonight? How good a PGA Open was that?
I am doing great, and the large part of why I'm doing great is because we got to see some championship golf, and you know what a tournament. I mean, what a great way to start the championship season. It's been a delay. Everything's been weird, just like in every sport. But you know, the guys at the PGA, and I want to say a big shout out and congratulations to the guys Seth Waugh, Susie Whaley, Price, Dan Dillon, local chairman. Everybody did a great job in putting on that tournament, making it happen in this COVID-19 era. And they were rewarded with an unbelievable championship. And just, I mean, what a sparkling new talent, you know, you have on the horizon, Colin Morikawa. This couldn't be better.
We'll get into the play of the winner, which was phenomenal, in a second. But anytime you have a major play, everyone wants to dissect the course. Had to get back to Harding Park. Been a while, but I thought the course A looked phenomenal. We're doing this live. Colin was just handed the trophy, the Wanamaker trophy, and he goes to lift it over his head, and the top comes off, and he almost beamed himself in the head. Luckily, he dodged well, much like he dodged any problems out there on the course. He dodged the top of the trophy and didn't hurt himself. But that's a video you'll be seeing on YouTube for years and years and years to come. All right, back to the course. How did you think Harding Park looked? How do you think it played? How fair was it? How tough was it? Give me your evaluation of the course before we talk about the guy who mastered it.
I think it's another great advertisement for public golf courses being the settings for major championships. I've been watching that course since I was managing golf courses some years ago, and that was sort of one of the standards, along with Bethpage up in New York, of how the game of golf and local governments come together in these public-private partnerships and take a really good golf course and make it into something special. And I think, again, Kerry Haig, who does a course set up for the PGA, did a fantastic job in taking a course that has to play muni play, but doesn't have these greens that are small and super slopey, and the ball is going to be rolling away from you at 17 miles an hour, you know, when you just hit a 2-foot putt. The greens are relatively flat and relatively large, but they had the rough up, and the weather cooperated with some nice, cold, heavy air, and you got a champion with a great championship score, but, you know, they didn't run away from it. You know, people were thinking they were going to put up 21, 22 under or something like that. No way. I think this course really acquitted itself well, and again, a special shout out to the guys who set it up. And you know, it's going to be back. That course could easily host another major championship.
Absolutely, it should after the tournament they put on here against the odds that they were going against. The only thing I noticed about it was, and I'm not critiquing it, I'm just pointing it out. It seemed like the one thing that they kind of tinkered with was the greenside bunkers. That they weren't real sandy. They were almost beaten down, and guys had tough times getting up and down out of those bunkers. Do you think that was planned? That's just the way it worked out? Did guys not have good up and down weeks? They played fine for the fairway bunkers, actually, because I thought they were flat there, too. Guys could pick it off and go 200-plus out of a fairway bunker if necessary. What do you think of the greenside bunkers?
Well, yeah, you just said it. You just covered it because, you know, not a bunch of sand in bunkers. Welcome to the world of municipal golf. That's what they do. And, you know, I don't have any sympathy for guys who say, oh, there's not enough sand in these bunkers and I can't manage it. So you do this for a living, okay? And you can go have a wedge made for you from scratch, out of steel by Thor, okay? You have that much money that you can go get a special wedge that is especially made for these conditions. So I just don't want to hear it. So the greenside bunkers, they play how they're played. You know that you have to pick it, so go do that. And you know, as you said, they have a big advantage out of the fairway bunkers because they can just absolutely go for it. They don't have to worry about picking up a spoonful of sugar. So, you know, it cuts both ways. But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody plays the same course. And, you know, you got one guy who played it better than everybody else.
Yeah, the bunkers did give it and take it away. We're talking to Michael Williams from CBS Radio, our golf insider and writer for Golf Arcs. Give me the background on Colin Morikawa. I saw him win a couple of weeks ago. It was a nice win. Wasn't a major tournament by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But he's a youngster who made his name pretty quickly and his bones on the tour. I couldn't have told you before this weekend started exactly what his game was. I can tell you what DJ's game is. I can tell you what McIlroy's game is. I can tell you what Tiger's game is. I didn't know what Morikawa's game was. How would you describe his game, and did he play above and beyond his game this week?
So a couple of fun facts about Colin Morikawa, a guy who at one time was the top-ranked amateur in the world. So people who follow amateur golf very much know him. Turned pro in 2019. Only took 6 starts for him to get his first tour victory. It's 2019 at the Barracuda Championship. He got his second one this year in a playoff against Justin Thomas. So he has actually now more wins than missed cuts. In his career, which is saying something. He started off his career with 22 made cuts, which before he missed one, which is second place to a guy named Tiger, who started off his career with 25. And I think another fun fact is that when he played in the Farmers Insurance Open this year with Tiger, was paired with Tiger, that was the first time that Tiger was paired with a player in an event who was born after him. After he turned pro.
Wow.
Yeah. So he is a guy who people know about who follow golf. And you're asking for one word to describe his game. I would say his description from him would be elegant. He plays every club in the bag. He moves the ball both ways. He has the ability to control his ball flight, to control his shot shape. He is the absolute polar opposite of somebody like, let's say, a Bryson DeChambeau, who's trying to turn the game into a home run derby, right, where he hits 2 clubs. He wants to hit driver lob wedge on every single hole. This guy is a thinker. He plays chess while other guys are playing checkers. And I think he's built for championship golf. And, you know, God willing and the crick don't rise, I think you're going to see him at the top of the leaderboard in a lot of major championships in years to come.
And I'll tell you, as I was sitting here, I'm doing a show for the last 3 hours, and I'm trying to watch a tournament at the same time, and you're a little bit distracted while hosting a national sports talk show. But it seemed to me, they always give you the great behind-the-player look when he tees off. And basically, it seemed like he hit it exactly where he wanted to, in the way that he wanted to. He's not the kind who shapes shots and plays a major fade or a big hook. Temperate on either fades or hooks, but he hit it down the middle every single time, and it just seemed like he hit it exactly where he wanted to. I guess that's how you were just describing him, that he's just a stone-cold, very solid, fundamental player.
Yeah, he's, I'd say, elegant and very deliberate. You know, when you mention that he's like sort of hitting the spots in the air that he's aiming for. Now, he's the type of player who's aiming for like a spot 40 feet in the air that's the size of a Dunkin' Donut, and he puts it right through there and, you know, moves his ball and shapes his ball in that way. I'm going to tell you, that drive on number 16, that drivable par 4, again, kudos to the PGA Championship people for setting up this course so that you have so many holes where you had risk-reward, and, you know, people got, you know, rewarded and punished, you know, in equal amounts. But he stood up there, 16, a championship on the line on Sunday at his age, and takes the driver to 7 feet on a 300-yard drivable par 4. It's one of the great shots in PGA championship history, if not right, PGA tour history. And I think it's just a defining moment for a career. That's the type of thing that can launch a guy into thinking about, not only does it make us think about him in a different way, he's going to start to think about himself in a different way. If I can do that under those circumstances, what is it that I can't do? And we've seen Tiger hit those sorts of shots in different circumstances too, and look where it took him. So big, coming through big and big moments on big stages is what makes all-time greats. And yeah, I think you just saw another one. I think is the movie, right?
Could very well be, yeah. Won a couple of Academy Awards last year in the remake. We will be remaking another star on the PGA Tour. Michael Williams, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. All right. And, oh, by the way, the unbelievable drive that he had, 300 and change onto the green, 7 feet out. A second-year player might be able to do that. Very infrequently, but he might be able to do that. But then he's supposed to miss the putt. He drains the 7-footer and gets the 13 under, and that's why it became. It's the combination of both of those shots. Don't forget he had to make the putt. Will be, as you said, a historical golf memories down the road. All right, Dustin Johnson, birdies out on 18 to get to minus 11, so he finishes in a tie for second place before with Paul Casey. Before the tournament started, is this one where DJ can hold on? He's had so many chances in majors. He's only gotten one. Is this going to be another? He let it slip through his fingers. I'm not going to use the word choke because this was not a choke. He played under par golf today. This was just someone stepping up and playing out of his mind golf and took it from him. Is that the way the critics are going to look at it, or is DJ going to hear it? Another one, 3-day lead heading into Sunday, and he didn't get the job done.
No, I mean, you'll hear, look, I think everybody's, you know, with the internet, I mean, you'll hear a little bit of everything, right? Because, you know, that's the way people are. You're going to hear people that disparage him and say he didn't do this and he didn't do that. Look, he got beat by a better guy on a better day. I mean, that's just it. The guy put up a 64. And, you know, there's no shame in Dustin Johnson going out and shooting a 68, you know, in the final group. It's not like he, you know, completely stepped on his shoelaces a la Brooks Koepka, you know, who went out and talked a lot of oatmeal yesterday and then goes out and shoots four over. And I don't know if he was hurt, if that hip finally just popped out of place permanently, but it seemed like from very, very excellent lies, he was hitting a lot of terrible iron shots. And I wonder if he was not physically feeling tip top, but you know DJ, he had an okay day. Morikawa had an awesome day, and that's the way that works. You know, you can't play defense out there, right? It's not like you can go out and block somebody's shot. You got to do what you can do and see what the other guy does. But I think he did just fine, and it's good to see him back in contention because he hadn't been playing that well in the first 2 days of tournaments coming into this. So it's good to see him back on track. Fully expecting to see him do well at the rest of the majors this year.
All right, two more questions for you. And again, thanks for your time, Michael. Brooks Koepka put up a not-so-impressive 74 today and dropped to a tie for 29th when he was in the last three pairings.
Yeah.
And even before the tournament, they asked him about his chances today, and he said, kind of braggadociously, well, you know, I've kind of been here and done that. I've got a bunch of championships, and no one else up here on the top of the leaderboard has got the hardware that I've got. I know Koepka's a confident guy, but I never thought of him as a cocky guy, and he took it to the cocky level today. I don't know if that spurred the winner on at all. If anything, I thought it might have eaten at his buddy Dustin Johnson a little bit, who ends up finishing well above him. Koepka just being honest, shooting the breeze, thought that he could get a mental edge. Were you surprised by what he said before the tournament took off today?
Not really. I mean, he's a man of few words. You know, he's not he's not Phil Mickelson, you know, who will give you 15 minutes on, you know, the direction of the earth is spinning. You know, that's just Phil. That's who he is. But Brooks is more that quiet type, the soft-spoken type. But he definitely has a giant chip on his relatively giant shoulders. And he will tell you if he feels that, you know, he's better than this, he's better than the field. And he did the same thing with all the other championships. Look, he's the only guy who was coming in here who had a chance for a three-peat. You know, out of the, you know, coming into this championship, the last two U.S. Opens, the last two PGAs, he had two wins and a second in the U.S. Open. He had two wins in the PGA Championship coming into this one. So in my mind, he's earned the right to talk a little smack. Didn't come through. We'll see what happens in the U.S. Open because, you know, again, in major championships, if you take away this round, going into them, the favorite still has got to be Brooks Koepka.
All right, and I need you to be honest with me here, because they kept harping on it on the tournament. And again, I'm just judging by graphics, because I can't have the volume up while I'm doing a show. They kept mentioning about the fact that Paul Casey has played in more majors without having won one than anyone in the history of golf. And at one point, he was surely tied for the lead. He might have had it there for about 2 or 3 minutes where he had the lead solo by himself. And he, of course, finishes in a second-place tie with Dustin Johnson. 4 or 5 holes to go. Were you rooting for Paul Casey?
No.
Okay, that's an honest answer. I like it. Why not?
No. You know, Paul Casey's a nice player, and Paul Casey has made a great living. And he just might win a major someday. You know, we'll see. But I think, you know, for me as a guy who follows the game and has to talk about the game to guys like you, then I would. There are other stories I'd rather talk about. There'd be Colin, there'd be Brooks, there'd be DJ, there'd be, you know, any number of better stories. Cameron Champ, you know, would have been a great story. There's other stories that I'd rather tell. You know, God bless him. I wish him no ill, but you know, when I'm rooting for Paul Casey, no, I can't find a hook him. But, you know, maybe I need to go get to know Paul a little bit better. We spend some time, you know, have some beers and, you know, roll a couple frames of bowling. And, you know, we'll see if we can develop that type of relationship. But for now, yeah, I was rooting for somebody else.
All right. Give us a quick peek at the 2 remaining majors this year. There is no Open, a.k.a. the British Open. That's what I call it forever. And now I'm told I can't call it that anymore. I have to call it the Open. Sure. But we do have the U.S. and the late in the year Masters. What did we learn going forward from today's outcome as to what we can look forward to in the 2 other majors?
Interesting. Okay, so you have the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, which is one of the toughest courses, one of the most pure golf courses in the world. It is built, and the charter for that golf course, it was built by the members to host championship golf tournaments. And the first U.S. Open that they held there was won by Bobby Jones. It has pedigree as good as any course in the world. The course can be set up to be incredibly difficult. You remember in 1974, Hale Irwin won the Master at Wingfoot at 7 over was the winning score. That is how hard that course can be. The interesting parts are going to be that, you know, you're going to have U.S. Open rough, but you won't have U.S. Open fans to trample it down. So I would say the 2 things to look for there are, number one, the great views, because you won't have stands or anything like that. You'll be able to see these beautiful views. You'll have high rough, and I think you're going to see some lost balls like you really haven't seen before. And also, they're going to hustle those guys around there, because as you're coming later into the year, you'll have less daylight. So you got to squeeze in those tee times late in the day. Remember, you're not playing at the spring, beginning of spring or summer. You're going to have less daylight there, so they really have to get after it in terms of tee times. The Masters will be really interesting to, like, play in front of falling leaves instead of blooming azaleas and magnolias. I think, you know, the course is going to be in phenomenal shape, of course, because they have a budget, you know, like the Department of Defense, to keep it like that. So it's going to be absolutely gorgeous to see. And, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see if, you know, all these bombers, I mean, look at the guys at the top of the leaderboard, if these bombers can really finesse their game the way you have to, for Augusta National. And, you won't have fans. You won't have a bunch of people down there, you know, and the roars, you'll miss the roars through the pines, you know, as people make those great shots. But still looking forward to seeing the golfers, you know, do their thing at 2 of the best golf courses on the entire planet.
I will tell you this, as a former Westchester County resident of New York, who's had a cold one or two in the 19th hole at Wingfoot. Never played the course, but a member did invite me to come in and have a beer with him or two. Knowing the Westchester fans, oh, there'll be some in there. They'll sneak in. They'll get around the security. You try and run a tournament at Wingfoot and tell all those Westchester golf fanatics they can't show up, then we'll see. There may be some arrest, but they will get in and they will be seen on television. That's a prediction. Who's going to win it? I don't know. But I can guarantee you, I'll tell you, some people get in to actually observe on the fan side at Wingfoot. Great stuff, Michael. Appreciate you coming on board. Thanks much for the insight. We will definitely do it again. We get a little later in the season.
Always a pleasure, man. Anytime.
My pleasure.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.